If you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than in all the previous centuries of its existence. Nikola Tesla.
Welcome to the Frequency Shifter Show. I'm your host, Corinne Summers, founder of Artisan Pharmacy. In this show, we explore ways to raise the frequency of ourselves, one another, and our planet. We're digging deep into all things metaphysical, from what is frequency, to the power of sound, the Schumann resonance, our DNA, Reiki, the energy of water, and beyond. All to shift our minds and bodies back into alignment with richer states of connection, elevated awareness, and maximum human potential. And we're bringing on the global experts and thought leaders to share their wisdom as they let us pick their brains around all these juicy, mysterious topics.
First of all, I don't know who Ricky is and metaphysical. Schumann's Renaissance? I don't even know. What are you talking about? Wait a minute. I need us to take a step back and calm down. What are we even talking about here?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention, I have a co-host. The universe insisted. What can I say? This is Alex Terranova, founder of Dream Mason. He's sort of a newbie to some of this frequency stuff, and he's going to help keep everything balanced, grounded, and relatable.
So this show isn't just for the experts to nerd out on all things metaphysical, but it's an open welcome space for everyone to explore the mysteries of the universe and raise our frequencies together.
Today's guest, Sean Engel, is the powerhouse behind Witchy Wisdom, a spiritual and witchy brand. She's been featured in multiple publications, including Cosmo, Bust, The Daily Mail. She's actually the author of Cosmopolitan's book on love spells, which we get into in this episode, and Chicago Review's Power of the Hex. She also just launched a show called Witch Talk on YouTube. We dig into all things witchy wisdom and excited to have her.
This episode was, I think it's kind of funny because we start with like love spells, right? And love spells feel like a little, I don't know, like a little cheesy and cliche, like a little WB, like cheesy after school special. But I think that I took so much away from this because to look at like how love spells are actually intentions. And it's not like a magic potion. I can't like just do my love spell on someone and have it work, you know, without them being involved in the process somehow. And we talked about how we're always doing spells, which I thought was really interesting. Like simply like the idea of putting on makeup or getting yourself to look a certain way is a way of like putting on a spell and essentially getting people to behave or interact with you differently than they would otherwise, which I thought was really, really interesting. We talked about her journey to witchcraft, like why people find their way there, how she did. We talked about tarot cards. We talked about, I thought it was interesting when we got into mushrooms, like the mushroom magic, which is a part of a book she wrote. It was,
and I automatically was like psychedelic. And yeah, she was right, like, right. No, she was like, no, like real mushrooms.
I think we both were, cause it was like a surprise. Yeah. She was like real mushrooms and how they benefit us. But there was just a lot of, I think we talked about a lot of things that people think about witchcraft or magic or woo-woo that she really tied back to everyday, you know, type things we do and ways that we behave in a way that really made a lot of sense.
Yeah, I liked the focus on intention. And to me, that's always been my interpretation. So I loved hearing some perspectives that deepen that knowledge around it and like what, you know, what they really are, that we're basically, you know, I think we talk again in this episode about the meaning of abracadabra and that we're essentially just speaking our intentions into existence and kind of aiding them along with different rituals. So we dig into all kinds of ways to apply it to your regular life. And I think, you know, really debunking some of the mysticism around witchcraft.
Let's jump into this episode.
So, Sean, I'm excited to dig into all things witchy lifestyle in our conversation today. But one thing I'm really intrigued by that I want to start with is the book that you did or the contribution you made for Cosmopolitan for love spells. You know, we're all always looking for extra love in our lives. Could you tell me about, you know, what you put together for them, what the spells were like, if you have a favorite love spell maybe that you could let us all know about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So the Love Spells book was actually my first book contract. And I was really excited about it because Witchy Wisdoms, the brand, was built basically after a huge breakup that was like a seismic life-changing breakup that I had when I was about 23, 24. And I mean, it rocked my world completely. And Witchy Wisdoms, the blog, started out as healing tools I was learning in therapy, plus magic and tarot and divination. So to have that be my first book, it was really important to me. And a big part of that book in the beginning is all about self-love and self-love rituals, because you want to be able to magnetize somebody that loves you the way you love you. And if that isn't, you know, a lot, you're going to get into situations similar to the one that I was in. So as far as like favorite charms and spells that I have in that book, I think one of them is extremely simple, and I think it aligns really well with the topic of this podcast, but it's a smile charm. And it's really just like when you're approaching somebody that maybe you're interested in, or even if you're at an interview, like giving a smile to somebody is an extremely magical act. And if you set intention behind it, it can yield incredible results super, super quickly.
I have to, because we went right to your love spells in the book, and I'm coming from, wait, are spells real from your, and we've talked about other people about this, but I really want to hear your standpoint. And then kind of the second part of this is, if they are, I don't know how I feel about people being able to cast love spells on me and influence me, right? Without maybe, like, it's one thing if I'm doing it to somebody, but then I'm influencing somebody else. How do you kind of negotiate or talk about that?
Okay, so that is an amazing two-parter. So I'm very glad to tackle this. If you ask me, I do believe spells are real, but I do believe also that spells are really just intentional practices. And it's not necessarily the manipulation of energy in a, I don't know, like Harry Potter sense, but more of like how you're presenting yourself to the world and how you're bringing magic from you. It's like personal intent, which brings me to the second part of that question, where you have to actually, my second book that was released was Power of Hex. What is your ethical standpoint? You know, I like to describe love spells to people as, you don't want to start a relationship as a hostage situation. So if you're trying to cast a love spell on someone who's like completely uninterested, chances are it won't work. And if it does, if they're that easily manipulated when they're not interested, it's, I don't know.
Either way, a negative
chance there will.
Yeah, if it's against will, that's how I understand all this stuff too, that, you know, even the words that we speak, you know, our actions that we take, pretty much anything can be a spell or be magic. And especially if it's done with intention, you know, it can have a positive impact. But also if we do things and we maybe don't know enough about it, or we do it without enough awareness, we can accidentally kind of screw stuff up, or you could almost like create the wrong thing. Or again, if it's against the other person's will, that you could actually end up in a worse situation, kind of like F it up for both of you.
So yes, and I lean towards more of like practical realism in witchcraft, which for some people is like, what? How do those two even intersect? And sorry, Mike. and so I like to think of it this way. Let's say you cast a love spell on someone who's uninterested, and somehow it works. When you think about it, what kind of relationship is that going to be like? The underlying feeling for the other person is not going to be good. So of course, it's not going to be the relationship that you want. You know, people don't understand that the world and people in and of themselves are completely nuanced. Like, you'd have to be such a mono singular cellular substance to be manipulated in that way fully, I think. Right. So in the realism, you're just going to attract somebody that's not right for you. I don't necessarily believe myself in like opening portals and, you know, like not, I don't know, conjuring up something that makes you both walk through fire or things like that. Like, that's not my personal belief system. But I do believe that if you set an intention against someone else's free will, it's just not going to pan out for you.
That like makes, right? So it's not, I think the thing, right? I'm coming from a world where most of this stuff that we've seen is from like, you know, creative movie media land, right? Where spells can just like YouTube could cast a spell on me and suddenly I have no free will and I'm operating. No, I do. I think there's some truth to like the concept that we could get, you know, brainwashed or manipulated over time and then kind of shifted or changed, our consciousness can be messed with. But I think that's different than what you're saying is casting a spell. And I love the idea that it really is setting your intentions for you and how you're going to show up and how that energy change is going to ripple out into the world.
Well, and I'll give you an example for the listeners that can actually see me. I showed up in full glam, which in my opinion is a glamour spell. I'm looking for attention very clearly with this getup, and I'm going to be on camera all day. It's exactly what I want. So it's a simpler, more intentional, and I don't know, not, it's pretty practical. Like, it's not that outlandish, but if you add that, like, you know, magical touch to it where you're like, I'm doing this on purpose, it really just becomes more empowering.
So how do you, well, so how do you decipher, like, are you constantly creating spells? Is this an intentional, you wake up and there's a glamour spell, there's love spells. Is it all day is filled with this? Or are there times where I want to say it, you turn it off?
So that's a great question. When I was beginning my witchcraft practice, basically everything was intentional. It becomes very mundane in that way, you know, like I'm stirring my coffee with an intention. But when you do that, that habit builds. So everything has importance in your life. And the things that don't, the things you don't necessarily care about, they fall to the wayside. Of course, that shifts and changes over time. Now, as a more experienced practitioner, I'll do it for like stuff like this. I'm in an incredibly loving relationship now, so don't have to cast love spells every second. But I did. I definitely did. But yeah, I don't know. I'm way more chill about it. In fact, I think it was like a good 6 months during COVID. I didn't practice magic at all. It was just not available to me. But I allow the practice to just kind of ebb and flow in the way that it does and just kind of give myself a break.
I think like anything, the more you practice it, the more it does become second nature and something that you're just kind of doing automatically. So that makes me think of, you know, meditation has become like that for me, as well as energy work, like Reiki, doing Reiki and doing energetic like blessings and intentions, which I had then realized, oh, it's the same thing basically as magic. Like there's a lot of different ways to kind of get to the same result. And then it basically becomes like your intention. You're always manifesting, because most people are, their thoughts are constantly, you know, going to whatever they're most afraid of or the things that stress them out, like an untamed mind. If you're not conscious of your mind and where your thoughts are going, you're always going to that negative thing, right? Or like what I have to do next, or, you know, the fight I got in with my partner yesterday, or some fear of the future. But with living this intentionally, or, you know, constantly casting spells, essentially, as you say, or instilling magic in everything, you're constantly keeping your thoughts on something pure, positive, and aligned with what you want to create. So to me, that's like a fast track to manifestation, because you're training your brain to basically constantly be focused on the things that you desire and on getting things done, like moving, being present in the moment. It's like a living meditation.
Yeah, well, exactly. And like, you know, as I say, with the ebbing and flowing, sometimes that means rest and relaxation and healing more than actually attaining and go getting. It really just depends on where you're at. But I'll borrow a saying from my boyfriend where he says, same name, different sandwich. I like to call it magic and I like to call it spells, but it's, you know, it's intentionally living. And people have been doing this since the beginning of time.
Is there something that you wish you could really impart on people that this is not part of their world, right? Like maybe they don't encounter witches, maybe they don't really understand or believe in this type of energy or spells or intention setting. What can you share with someone that might, you know, be on the fence or that might open them up?
Well, that's the thing is because we live in a largely Catholic Christian society, we get condemned a lot, especially, you know, there's, I don't know, people just love to demonize strong women. But I think that the thing that I'd like to impart most on people is that witchcraft is self-help. It really is that simple. There's tons of lore around the subject. There are so many tools, astrology, divination, all of that. They're all available for self-help. They're there for guidance. It's just different ways to find the meaning of life. And that's what Catholic Christians do when they read the Bible, if they read the Bible. And yeah, it really is just a different magical path to enlightening yourself so you can be a light for others. And honestly, that's pretty beautiful. It's not demonic in any way.
Yeah, well, I know you shared us at the beginning how, when you wrote that book, where you were coming from in heartbreak, how has this changed? What were you like before? And how has the journey, you know, shifted and changed your life, aside from this, the relationship example you gave us?
So I'll be honest, I have been studying some form of witchcraft since I was 13. So, and I'm a triple Scorpio, if you follow astrology. I've just always been spooky, macabre. And yeah, people always look at me like I'm a very rare Pokemon.
It's fascinating. Scorpios, you guys are deep. I'm excited to hear more.
we're something. But yeah, so I've just always kind of been into spookiness. But divination was a really big part of my life when I was a kid. And then about like 13, 14 to 20-ish, it was like a full decade. I fell into drugs and boys and things. And I fell apart. I was searching for meaning in what other places. I had my downfall, essentially, where I was just trying to escape and escape and escape. And the climax was that very awful breakup, which was with a narcissistic heroin addict. It was pretty, like I hit the hill. So before I really started integrating magic, like before the brand, before, you know, witchy wisdoms was a thing, before I started practicing again and bringing that light back into my life, I was just searching for it. I was chaotic. I was unhappy. I was severely unhappy. And through the process of healing and dealing with my trauma with divination and magic and empowerment and meditation and really actually like healthy things, I found my way back to being authentic to myself. So yeah, I was this just like way more chaotic and young and unhappy.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I think we all have definitely those moments, usually more than one throughout life, where we have to kind of hit a rock bottom moment to gain clarity and be able to move back into life with a better perspective. So how did you come to witchcraft through that? Or what were the tools that you used at that time when you were, you know, kind of found yourself in that moment to get yourself back on track? Was it witchcraft? Was it plant medicine? Was it something else?
So, because I had studied divination when I was younger and like did spells and stuff, it was always kind of in my head. Like I was, was born Jewish. I still am. I was like, how do I phrase this? I'm foreign and still am Jewish. but my parents were like punk rockers when we were growing up. So they just asked us like, do you want to practice? Like, do you want to practice Judaism? My dad's German Catholic. They're like, do you want to do that? I was like, I'm going to be a witch. So I then studied a little bit of Kabbalah. But since that was already like in my curriculum, that's what I fell back on. But I incorporated therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and divination. So pulling a lot of tarot cards. And I think that people have a big misconception about tarot cards where it's like, tell me my future. When am I going to, you know, meet my soulmate? And you're kind of missing the point with tarot when you do stuff like that, because it's more of like, what do you need to do? What do you need to fill in order to get you to the position to where you can meet your soulmate? So that then becomes like really big introspection. And I don't know if you're familiar with tarot, but I was pulling lots of tower moments, lots of nine of swords. And it really made me look at myself in a language that I already understood. Sorry, did you see me? I feel like a bird just hit the window and scared the crap.
We're not going to edit that out because that was too awesome. But
no, especially if it was a bird that just like came and hit the window right at that moment.
Like tower moment, dinosaurs, holy shit.
Yeah, that might have been something. Maybe you were supposed to talk about that. I know every time you pull the tower card and you're just like, oh shit. But it's a good meaning though, and a lot of content. Good meaning. Could you explain though a little bit just for anybody who doesn't know like what you mean by divination, and also just a little bit about the tarot and just what it means to you and how you use it?
Totally. Yeah. So the tarot, okay, when I say divination, number one, it's just a way, so divining, it's the practice of trying to figure out answers to questions using non-magical items. Tarot cards used to be playing cards. People do it with tea, tassiography, cafeomancy, which is coffee. There are plenty of ways to divine. I love tarot cards. They originated as, actually, no one really knows the origination, but from my understanding, it was mainly in France in 1590 and then shifted over time. But because these playing cards have Jungian archetypes attached to them, Carl Jung was a psychologist who mentored Sigmund Freud. But because they have these type of archetypes, you're able to see yourself and part of your journey in it. So rather than playing with like a deck of cards who doesn't have the major arcana, which are the first 21 cards in the tarot decks, you're losing like meaning in that journey. I hope I didn't lose anyone, because I feel like that was a dense sentence.
Well, I hear you kind of explaining the, I don't want to call it the science, not the right word, but like the science, like the engineering or the mechanics behind this, which set it up. So please, yeah, keep going. Like what? What I just got also is that idea that we have to see ourselves in the inside of the cards, right? The cards aren't like magical. It's our relationship to them.
Exactly. They're a piece of paper. And, but you know, we all have intuition to different extent. But the more we tap into it and the more that we practice using it and the more that we trust ourselves, we are able to see messages in these cards in that way. So when I say the major arcana, like again, the first 21 cards, it catalogs the Fool's journey and all of his iterations for moments in time. And when you pull one of these, it's supposed to mean a life moment, big life moment, something big that you're changing through. And then we have supporting minor arcana cards. And yes, they are all, they're numbered in a way and they can be somewhat simple, but they have so many symbols and they have so much art to look at, especially if you're looking at like the original Rider-Waite, to where if you're pulling these cards and you're studying them and you're seeing different symbols pop up in different points in your life, you can then trust that your intuition is telling you that's where you need to focus. So it's a really amazing practice and it is incredibly dense, because we're using astrology, numerology, and symbolism, Jungian symbolism all throughout the deck. But once you start gaining a mastery of these cards and of yourself and your own self-trust, it becomes an amazing tool.
Mm. That's the part I've always been interested in learning more about, is the connections to astrology and numerology. There are a lot of, there's like a mathematical process that went into the creation of them, and something else about statistics. And so I don't understand it to that depth. I would love to know more if you have anything else to add to that. But overall, that's how I use them too, and how many of the teachers I've studied under and have worked with and collaborated with use them as well. It's like, this is it's a way of going deeper into the self and deepening our relationship with intuition and seeking guidance, you know, being able to ask, I think too, building that relationship with source and being able to ask for guidance and then wait and receive an answer of some sort, put it into action for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like there's a level of surrender too when we're practicing tarot, right? You're giving yourself over to, like you say, source, universe, your intuition, whatever it is, so that you can kind of like come in with a blank slate to receive. It's similar to therapy in a way, where you're, you know, giving yourself over, you're becoming vulnerable to then learn tools in order to sustain yourself through life. So, you know, it's just a version of that. I don't think a replacement, though, just FYI.
One of the things I've come to do, which I love hearing what you're saying because it makes me feel like I tapped into something, is I have a deck. There's two different kinds of decks, right? Because there's a tarot deck and then there's I forget what they call the other, right? Like my deck.
Oracle?
Yeah, maybe it's like an oracle deck, right? It's not like the traditional I'm holding up. But one of the things that I felt like when I would open up any type of deck and I'd read what it says that it is, it felt like this is what it means to the person who created the deck, which isn't wrong or bad. It simply isn't necessarily what it means for me. And so one of the practices I took on was when I pull a card, I sit with the card and I'm like, what am I supposed to get from this? Right? What do I see? What value is there for me? And then the card actually isn't telling me anything. The card is simply triggering, right? Or creating, I'm creating a relationship with it that is like creating a new energy or a new thought. And then if I want more, then I might go to the book to see what the book says. When I hear it, it's like, hey, that's a great relation. That's a great way to play with this because that's really what it's all about.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's holding up a mirror to yourself. That's what you're essentially using the card as. And as a person who's written multiple books, I like to remind people too, it's like, yeah, you're hearing the author's voice. This is not the end all be all. You are mainly hearing one perspective in an incredibly rich community. So it's important to read from people that you know. And it's easy to do that now in Instagram because you can actually connect with authors and see what they're all about, their message, their ethics. And I think a lot of people, you can get into trouble if you don't do that. I know there's a very famous book. I think it's just called Witch, but it's highly transphobic. the first page is highly transphobic. And, you'll get suggested that maybe on Amazon and then sent down some weird alt-right rabbit hole or something. It's really important to fact check your authors and see who you're actually learning from.
It's a great point too, to think just because someone is brilliant in one area doesn't make them brilliant in all areas or that we should look to them for all things. I mean, so many of the world's most powerful leaders have been people that are ethically or morally way out of whack, but yet they're able to lead in a way and get people to follow, right? I think that we can look at different things of wow, they were charismatic or they were leaders, but we shouldn't probably follow them in other regards. And I kind of think we should always look to that.
It was also, and that's what I
No, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, and I think that's what I really try to impress upon, especially my followers, is that use critical thinking, and if you're ingesting information from a person, you want to make sure that you're beliefs align with that. And it's almost like any other religion or any other practice, right? You're not going to go to a pastor who you know is, I don't know, think of something that you wouldn't want to be aligned with. So why would that be different from learning from a witch online? Why wouldn't you hold them to the same standards, And I think we get kind of stuck in this little dangerous tete-a-tete when we see a lot of people getting book deals just because they have followers. And then they regurgitate some of the same things and input dangerous thing. And when I say that, I mean divisive and I'll use the word again, alt-right rhetoric, which I'm seeing just pop up so much in the spiritual space.
I think there's an interesting, if it's when you talk about the spiritual space or the alt-right, I think there's a really, if any direction that we go in, the further we get to fringes of anything, often the more extreme things get, right? Any topic, right? If all of a sudden you started saying tarot cards are the end all be all of everything in life, and I'm going to do only what they say, all of a sudden, right? The limitations or possibilities of your life became really really small and limited. And I think that's the powerful thing here is when we look at somebody, I can go to you and I can take whole wisdom from you that fits and serves me, but I don't have to take everything, right? I don't have to make you my God or my end all be all. And the beauty of that, right, is I can take what serves me from you And then I can go to Judaism or Christianity and take what serves me from them. And then I can go to Corinne and take what serves me from her. Right. And I can actually create my own relationship to the life that I want to build.
So do you know what you just described?
My life.
Eclectic. It's eclectic witchcraft. It's a grab and go, customizable. That's exactly what I practice. A little bit of Thelema's free will, a little bit of, you know, magical spells, but really is a grab and go to fit your personal ethical and moral and beliefs and all of that good stuff. But yeah, that's eclectic witchcraft.
Which I think more and more people are practicing, not even eclectic witchcraft, but eclectic more spirituality as a whole. I was raised Christian. I don't consider myself not a Christian now, but I've gone to many other religions. I also consider myself a witch. I call myself more of a cosmic witch or a green witch, if we're getting into like specifics. But I'm a practicer, you know, I've studied Buddhism and I've studied, you know, pretty much every religion out there. I have a copy of the Bhagavad Gita. I've also read the Quran. I have read the Bible. And I've, you know, taken things. And I think that's kind of a modern, and from politicians as well, rather than being like totally on one side. I don't know. I think it's a way of we've kind of evolved to be more inclusive. I hope so, as we, you know, especially in the new, like younger generations, I think we're being more inclusive of being people that have lots of different parts about them, lots of different facets about them. We don't have to be all in on one thing or shut out everybody else that believes something different just because we believe one thing or one fragment of this particular modality or spirituality or whatever, if that makes sense.
Totally. I mean, essentially that's just like appreciating the gray, right? Like, what can I learn from this person? And also that's, you know, a great place for criticism or critical thinking too. The gray area is where the magic lies. And when we're extreme about anything, we cut that part out of our lives. We're just like not allowing any part of us to access it. And that's kind of a shame.
And we're shutting other people out as well. You know, it's very much like an egocentric move to say, I'm only going to believe this and I believe this and your ideas are wrong and there's no room for error or there's no room for discussion or debate or hearing out. Like, I don't know. I guess I've always lived a life of, you know, to me, that's expansion. It's like, I believe this and this. Not just this. Mm-hmm. And I give room for other people's ideas to kind of seep their way in, which it sounds like you guys do too.
So let's talk about this then. Are you going with mushrooms? Is that?
Yeah.
We're on the psychedelics
and her and Witch Talk, her YouTube show, but let's do mushrooms first.
The mushroom thing that I'm also, so while we were talking, I was looking at your mushroom book online. And the first thing that surprised me is, you know, so you have a book called Mushroom Magic. I thought when I started looking at it, it was like going to be all about psychedelics. And then when I read the description, it actually talks about how
chaga
essentially spells and rituals with all types of mushrooms. So there's kind of a lot. Will you give us a little bit about why mushrooms are magic? But then also, I know for me, for both of us, actually, psychedelics, mushrooms have opened worlds for us and in various ways and given us access to things we weren't able to access in our, you know, let's just say natural consciousness. Will you speak to some of this?
Yeah, so it's interesting that you bring this up because I'm kind of the go-to witch of my publishing house, which is Sterling. So they come to me and they're like, can you do something with mushrooms? And I'm like, yeah, I could do something with anything. Just give me a minute. And so that's essentially how the idea like came about. And they were like, really don't want it to be about psychedelics. And I was like, well, that's a little like, you're calling it mushroom magic. We don't want it to be about psychedelic. We have to include like something, right? So I touch on a few like magic mushroom thing, but really mycology is an extremely fascinating science. There are like over 7,000 species of mushrooms and they all have importance and lore in all over the world. So I've included folk tales. I've included breakdowns from different communities all across the globe. And then taking from the qualities of whatever mushroom, then I created spells through it. So like if a mushroom is symbiotic, meaning that it feeds off of its host, that's going to be something that's probably good for manifestation, right? Perhaps we're feeding each other magic. Or let's say we have a mushroom that is blue in color. That's perhaps going to be great for communication because it has that quality of the throat chakra. So that's basically how I framed the book. And I'll be honest, I will be 100,000,000% honest. I wrote that book so research heavy, like cited all of my sources, tons of dissertations that I read. I probably couldn't tell you specific properties now. I brain dumped it all into that book.
That's so cool, though. It sounds like an amazing resource. I didn't know it was going to be so in-depth, and that must have taken a lot of work to create all the spells that go along with each one, but so fun to match up the qualities.
It's the most fun.
I guess you probably won't be able to share a favorite one or a favorite mushroom. Do you have a favorite mushroom?
So, yes and no. Okay, so my favorite spell that I wrote in the book is you can dye fabrics with certain mushrooms. So I created a fabric dye that's somewhat of a glamour spell so that you can dye it towards your intention using color magic. So like I said, blue with throat chakra, yellow for like confidence. And that can be like, you know, your magic scarf that you adorn yourself with when you need a little bit of an oomph.
That's really cool. Sorry, Alex, I think you were unmuting there. Go for it.
You said it's not in the book. Do you feel like you have experience, like wisdom around psychedelic mushrooms? Is this an area, like, does it take part in your practice, your business, your life?
Oh, no, I've actually never done mushrooms, which is why I was like, I don't really have the experience to speak on it. I've done everything else under the sun, right? Not mushrooms. And so I was like, it honestly wouldn't really be fair for me to be like, oh, you know, your trip can be like this. So I wouldn't have been the best person for that book anyways, but from what I hear, it can be a very surreal and magical experience.
And I want to ask you something quickly then about like your just book writing in general, right? To be someone who is very much in the energetic space, I think often writing a book can fall in the very masculine of like, hey, I need to start this thing. I need to do this thing, get it done. There's deadlines. There's accuracy. I totally believe it could be done with the more feminine energies, but it seems like in the world we live in, writing a book is a very masculine oriented task. Do you have a practice or a way that you blend that for people that, what I notice is some people have brilliant things to say and they're not able to create that because they can't fall into that masculine of getting it done. What's your process like of, you've written what, 4 or 5 books at this point?
Yeah. So I am blessed because I'm naturally diligent. I've just literally always been that way. I've always contained more masculine energies anyway, tons of Scorpio and Capricorn in my chart. But what I like to do for myself, and I know specifically a hurdle I come across is when I see a task in front of me, like a book that is unwritten with no structure yet, like I feel really daunting. So to come up with like to just have that final deadline feels way too big for me. So I like to chop it up into mini deadlines. I like to utilize math. And if they want a certain number of words, I'm like, okay, well, how many words a day would I need to write to satisfy that deadline? And then I kind of chop it up, put it all in my weekly planner. And then just kind of after that, after I plan it all out, then I can just execute. I give myself a time frame within a week to do whatever. And then I'm able to execute. If it's a research book like Mushroom Magic, I think that's even more masculine. I mean, of course, I have my own writing style and my own creativity that goes into that. But if it's something like Power of Hex, which was all creative, I would more block off just, you know, time to R&D, time to cast my own spells and see, like, sink into the energy and feel how I felt. But that's also scheduled stuff. You know, I'm on retainer for this book. So, I mean, I used to tell all my clients when I was doing coaching that if you chop things up into tiny bite-sized pieces, it becomes way more manageable.
That's really good advice. And I mean, a good way to approach any project or anything that you want to achieve, right? If you try to go after the end goal, you're going to get overwhelmed and you're not going to be able to accomplish it right away. So you'll get discouraged trying to get there. I'm excited to check out your books.
You also wrote, You have your talk show coming up, Witchy Witch Talk?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? And how is that different from, like, you know, how is that different from the, your book writing process? It's the first thing you've done that's more, you know, media focused.
So, I mean, yes and no. I've been an influencer for a while, or content creator for a while. So I'm not sure if you guys are even familiar with, like, TikTok's witch community, but it's called Witch Talk. So I decided to do a play on words and do a Witch Talk show. And the reason why I wanted to brand it that way is because Witch Talk is so depressing now. Everyone is like, it's just so much discord. And I wanted to break away and make something super, super fun. I want all my friends to come on the talk show, and we're just going to shoot the shit based on whatever moon phase we're in. That'll be like a very loose thing that we can kind of talk about. And then we're going to play games. I'm hoping to have entertainment. Like, I really want to expand this project. But because I have quit business coaching, really putting all my eggs in this basket as a creative endeavor. And I want to edit the videos to make it look like, I'm not sure if y'all are familiar with Trixie and Katya, but they do a show called on YouTube. And it's just all green screen, very kitschy, very fun. And that's the type of energy that I want to bring to the project. I want people that practice any sort of spirituality to be able to come have a laugh with people that get who they are and just feel better about having that sort of community rather than it feeling punitive or makes them feel like you can't be yourself because you'll get attacked. I want it to be lighthearted, fun, and instill the values that I built my brand on.
There's so much. It's funny. All these things that you mentioned are things I'm not familiar with. And it's just a reminder that how much creativity, brilliance, wisdom, play, fun is available. And it's not that we all need to do all of it, right? But there's just so much out there and what humans are capable of, right? We create so much, all these channels on YouTube, even the ones that are terrible, right? Even the TikToks that are terrible, right? Even if somebody has no followers and no one's watching, and it's right, I'm judged terrible as a judgment, but like that if no one's paying attention, you're still creating something and you're still making something that didn't exist before. And so I love that you're bringing that, and like the levity, there's a levity to what you bring, which is really nice. There's an intentionality, a levity and an ease.
Thank you. I thought that was just a missing piece of the market because we don't necessarily have it. But to your point, that's kind of just the way that I've always done things. I call it guerrilla marketing, where I created my podcast network out of nowhere. You know, anyone can create a podcast now. So why can't we have a network? Why can't I have one? So why can't I have a talk show? YouTube exists. You know, the possibilities are endless. You can literally do whatever you want, but you, one, have to have the courage and you have to have the discipline.
And fully being yourself, I think, as you obviously are as well. It's like when you own who you are and you are able to do it out loud with confidence, then you're able, you know, you're obviously and automatically going to be able to attract the people that are looking for that. So that's awesome. Speaking of all of those things and TikTok, Witch Talk, all the places to find you, could you just let listeners know where to connect with you after the show, where to follow you, your website, all that good stuff?
Yes. So I am no longer doing any coaching, but I am available for event, book signing, being on sun shows like this. So come connect with me at Witchy Wisdoms everywhere. Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube. Actually, if you type my name, Sean Engel, into YouTube, you'll be able to find my channel probably easier. I would definitely follow that because Witch Talk comes out April. On the April new moon. I'll do a double check on what date that actually is. But yeah, that's where you can find me.
Wonderful. Thank you. And thank you again for being on this episode of the Frequency Shifter Show. Everyone, thanks for listening. And make sure you check out those links in the show notes below. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Frequency Shifters. We really hope that you got some value, you learned something, and that there's something from this episode that you can take away and use in your life. Who are you thinking of right now that needs to hear this episode? Please share it with them. Share this on social media, subscribe and like, and leave a comment.
And please, if you have a comment or an idea or something that you want us to talk about or investigate, leave it online and we will go into those and bring you that information. Please like, share, and subscribe, and we will see you next time.